Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Tree of Life Hour. This is Samara Luna, and due to unforeseen circumstances tonight, Raven Fire and I will not be doing a live show. However, we are going to replay a show from October last year where we were speaking to Shauna Ora Knight about pagan leadership. So if you want, please enjoy this rebroadcast and make sure to listen Saturday, July 15th as Pagans Tonight Radio Network has their 8-year anniversary show, and you might even get to hear us. So everyone have a blessed evening, and we will talk to you next week.
Blog Talk Radio.
All right, apparently our intro isn't playing. This is Samara Luna.
And this is Raven Firedoll.
And this is the Tree of Life Hour, and here is our intro real quick.
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from witchschool.com. Are you looking for the best in pagan and magical education? With more than 12,000 pages, witchschool.com is like having your own personal library with individual learning assistants to help you study. And Witchschool's anyone, anytime, anywhere education system is available any place on earth, anywhere you are and anytime you want it, as long as you have an internet connection. Witchschool's lifetime memberships are a great value. They really do last a lifetime. They've been there for years, and they'll be there for years to come. So get your membership today at witchschool.com.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.
All right, so now that our intro played, not sure what happened there, but this is Samara Luna, and this is the Tree of Life Hour here on the Pagans Tonight Radio Network. The Tree of Life Hour is brought to you by the Tree of Life Community Center, a nonprofit group of people in the Louisville, Kentucky area that are creating space for people with earth-based religions and philosophies. And our show is all about community, things we think the community should know and be talking about. And let's see, Ravenfire already introduced herself, so that just kind of threw us off a little bit. Sorry. So tonight, though, we have a special guest. For those that have been listening to Pagans Tonight for a long time, you will recognize her as a former host. And she has come back to discuss leadership with us tonight, and that is Shauna Ora Knight. Welcome back.
Thanks, glad to be here.
And Ravenfire, are you still there or did I lose it?
I'm right here.
Okay.
I'm right here. Sipping on my hot chocolate, listening.
No, I got my latte. And just to let everybody know, I am in chat, or I was in chat. Apparently it reloaded and I'm not now in chat, but I will be in chat here in just a minute. So if you have any issues or concerns you want to bring up in chat, you can let us know. And you can always join us on blogtalkradio.com and make yourself an account. It is free. And you can go in the chat room with us and speak to us. So, Shauna, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself just to start for those people that don't know who you are?
Sure. My name is Shauna Ora Knight, and I am I'm an author, I'm an artist, and I am a traveling pagan teacher. I write fiction and nonfiction. The fiction I write is more focused on kind of paranormal romance, fantasy, that kind of thing. The nonfiction I write about is, and the stuff that I teach when I travel to various pagan festivals or when I do like weekend intensives, is I teach pagan leadership. I teach stuff on, you know, group dynamics, conflict. You know, how to deal with conflict in groups. And I also teach facilitation. Usually the stuff that I teach is how to facilitate rituals, but I also do workshops on how to teach workshops, which sounds a little navel-gazing, but it's actually a really needed skill in our community. I also do workshops and rituals more focused on kind of personal and spiritual growth. And I would say that kind of underlies everything that I do, is I'm trying to help people help make space for our communities to be better, for if each of us as individuals can reach for our best selves and learn better skills of leadership and group dynamics, then I believe we can have better, stronger, healthier, and more sustainable communities.
Awesome. So what do you think, what is some of the best advice you can probably give to someone that wants to kind of step into a leadership role? I know that a lot of people don't really want to step into a role. They kind of get forced into that role sometimes.
Right.
So what is your best advice for someone new to it all?
Well, there's some common advice that I could offer to many different scenarios, but it does kind of depend on, like, if you are really, you know, you're wanting to step into a leadership role, you're really feeling called to that kind of service, that kind of ministry, which is a little bit different from, you really don't want to be a leader, but you are just by virtue of the fact that you stepped up to get something done and you don't really want to be in that position. You'd rather be following somebody else, but there's nobody else to do it. Or, you know, another reason that a lot of people end up as leaders is they're part of a group and that group implodes, or there's some really unethical leadership or an abusive leader and they leave, and then they're like, okay, well, I still want something to happen in my community and I want it to be more ethical. So there's a number of different paths people take to get into leadership. But across the board, whatever path, you know, that you found yourself on that got you into the position of leadership, one of the best things you can do is to join up with, and this is more like if you're thinking, okay, I really want to learn the skills for how to build a healthy group. One of the best things you can do is to join another group, a group that's already in existence, and kind of learn from what's going on. That isn't always an option. I know a lot of the reason that people step into a leadership role is because there isn't anything in their area. But that being said, there's, you know, if you do have that opportunity, you know, join up with a group that's already going on and see what works and what doesn't work. Even if you're part of a group that isn't necessarily doing a great job, you can kind of learn, okay, that didn't work. And I don't mean that to sound flippant. It's just, you know, that's one of the ways that we learn, that we humans learn, as we, you know, see, okay, that's a thing that didn't work. Or maybe it just didn't work for you. You know, there's lots of different types of leadership. And maybe you're in a group that has a more hierarchical model and you want something that's more egalitarian, more democratic. So then you can go, okay, that really didn't work for me, so I want to try something different, which is great. It's a, you know, it's not wasted time to have tried something out. If you don't have the opportunity to step into, you know, a group that's already existing and volunteer and kind of, get a mentor in that respect, you can also, like, particularly if you're looking at doing the kind of leadership where you might be planning events, attending other people's events, even if it's not a pagan event, you know, just try and attend other things that you can see how it's done, learn from that. But really, a lot of the best things you can do in leadership are understand group dynamics and getting a sense of group dynamics, communication. The thing that I've been teaching a heck of a lot lately when I teach leadership workshops is I teach different communication styles, because I would say something like 75% of the conflicts that I see out there are what I would call innocent conflicts, where it's not that anybody was bad, that nobody woke up and was like, I'm going to go be an evil tyrant today. It's just they communicate differently than somebody else, and that creates miscommunications, which creates conflicts, which means the group might blow up. Not because anybody was bad or did anything wrong. It's just there were miscommunications. So, you know, I would say learning about communication and communication styles is probably one of the best things that you can do as a leader. Another thing that I really strongly recommend is really getting to know yourself. Sometimes we can get a little navel-gazing in our culture, but we do that navel-gazing without actually looking at our deep selves. And I would say shadow work and understanding yourself and how you tick and what pisses you off and what works for you, you know, understanding all those different things is really important, because, I can get into more depth on it if you want. But one of the one of the things I noticed for myself is, like, I have to know what my triggers are. I have to know what is going to really tick me off. And I have to know my own bad habits as a leader. I have to know my own bad habits as just a human before I start trying to work with people. Because whenever you're in a group, those things, you know, all of our bad habits are going to magnify, and that's how we end up with a lot of conflict.
And, I never really thought about that, but we've done that with some stuff where we've sat down and talked stuff out amongst ourselves. And I know, kind of point out, hey, I know I'm this way, and, you know, but let's mm-hmm. work through this type deal
mm-hmm.
thing.
Well, with us, we also – go ahead, Samara. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go on. I wasn't saying anything.
Okay, I was saying the other thing that we do, at least with the center, is those of us on the board, we kind of encourage each other to call each other on their own BS in, like, a loving manner. Like, not, hey, you're an awful, horrible, terrible person, but, hey, you know, this came off as it sounds like this. And I know that you don't mean for it to sound like this, but this is how it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that helped. I mean, that's something that tends to help us, because, like, our communication styles are a little different, and that's something that we've just kind of learned. But for us to be viable, is we keep saying that we want people involved who can sit down and say if we are starting to be a little bit, you know, and I think part of the idea from the center grew from some bad leadership experiences here in Louisville,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, where we're just like, okay, we want to be able to have somebody just say, okay, hey, look, you're a little bit too big for your britches, or, hey, do you realize you're alienating these people over here, or the stuff like that.
Right.
Excuse me. And I think that's kind of one of our strengths, is that at least between us on the board, is that we are actively, like, if we have a hole on the board, we're actively looking for someone who's different from us, who has a strong enough personality, who is okay with calling us on our BS in a creative way, in a constructive way, not saying, hey, you're a jerk, or hey, you're a butthole, but hey, you know, you didn't say this right, or this is coming across this, and mm-hmm. have you thought of it this way? And I know Serenity on numerous occasions has kind of, like, at least towards me, said, hey, you know, the way you said this sounds like this. And I know you don't think that way, but this is what it sounds like. And I'm like, oh.
Right. Yeah, I would say being able to address things transparently like that can cut away so many conflicts. One of the core pieces of that, because a book I often recommend is Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg, and the core, I mean, if you really want to boil, I mean, there's a lot of specific tools and techniques in the book, but the core essence of it is two things. One is you're trying to not make an assumption for what somebody else's motivation is, and, like, we just do that in our culture. We just, you know, we make the assumption for, oh, well, this is what somebody meant when they did this. But the thing is, you know, I don't care how many psychic development classes you've taken, you can't know what somebody else is genuinely thinking or feeling. And, you know, you can make some assumptions, you can make some guesses, but you really don't know what's going on for them. And I literally know of pagan community conflicts that, I mean, it started with something as ridiculous as, like, you know, well, Bob was glaring at me across the circle. It's like, well, how do you know he was glaring? Maybe he was squinting because it's bright out. You know, you can't tell for something like that. And that actually goes back into knowing yourself, because a lot of people, and I do see this in pagan leadership, and it's unfortunate, but a lot of people have this big chip on their shoulder, and they think everybody's out to get them. Oh, so, you know, oh, so-and-so's texting me, so-and-so's psychically attacking me. You know, they go on and on about this. And I'm like, well, why would they bother doing that? Like, what's so important about you that they're going to do that? And it's not to say that that doesn't happen. It's just that most of the people that I hear going on and on about that, it's actually that they are wounded people, and they, you know, maybe they were, you know, I mean, I had this experience of, you know, maybe they were bullied, maybe they were, you know, hurt in other ways, and they tend to look at everything and everybody around them is like they're out, everybody's out to get me. And that's really not a healthy way to interact, you know, as a leader, because again, you know, I'm in the know on some of your group sites, Community Dynamics in Louisville, circa, you know, a few years ago.
Right.
Since I was, you know, doing some work with some folks in the area. And, you know, I certainly ran into some folks who had the whole, like, well, I couldn't possibly be long, you know, and everybody's out to get me. And it's like, you know, maybe you might want to check out what you're actually doing that's contributing to that. Now, on the other hand, there is something that I do see that happens where, as far as the, you know, hexing, psychic attack, gossip, you know, brigade that happens sometimes. Sometimes what happens is, let's say group leader A has been in a community for a really long time. Like, they've been leading a coven for 10 or 20 years, and they run a couple of local events that are public. And let's say group leader B moves to town. And group leader B is not, I mean, they're not, like, you know, really super motivated to go run, you know, any big events or anything. But there's nobody else doing anything in their tradition. And they want to get something started in their tradition. So they start something small, and they more and more people start joining their group. And in fact, some people from group leader A's group start joining group leader B's group. And group leader A gets all ticked off about it and ends up starting a whisper campaign, which is what I kind of call it, when they start gossiping and you know, the malicious gossip where they're telling lies, but like, oh, well, so-and-so is doing, you know, group leader B is doing XYZ really horrible stuff, and they start spreading the gossip around. And then, you know, group leader B is like, what did I do? Why are you pissing in my cornflakes here? And I see a lot of great leaders who, I mean, they are just in it to try and serve community, and they get burned out because, you know, people like group leader A are all, you know, high, you know, hopped up on it and egotistical and trying to tear them down because they feel like, oh, they're stealing my group members, so I've got to destroy them. And, you know, it's a horrible dynamic, but I do see it with some frequency. So I just wanted to be clear that when I say, you know, if you're thinking everybody's out to get you, then maybe the problem's with you. And that is true, but at the same time, if you're really clear, like, no, I'm really, you know, I've heard people telling me what so-and-so is saying about me. I am really clear that I'm under personal attack on this. I wanted to make clear that, you know, both things do happen. And that's why the personal work is so important, because you have to be able to discern, like, is this my baggage telling me that so-and-so is out to get me and I'm making up this whole big story about it because I'm so used to people being out to get me? Or is this really genuinely somebody else trying to take me down because of their own, you know, egotism and their own issues? And so, I mean, as a leader, you really have to know your own stuff, or it's going to play out within the scope of what you're trying to do as a leader. That drama is going to play out. And, you know, I see that where it's our own issues that tend to bring the groups down.
Now, I know some things that happen amongst groups is they view each other as competition.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Even though they may be, you know, completely different paths, have completely different goals. And it,
yeah,
Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, Ravenfire?
I said we've run into that with competition from completely different paths.
Right.
But how do you approach, I mean, how would you suggest approaching, I mean, because we've had that issue, actually, where someone was viewing our group as competition. I mean, that's in the past now, so I'm not really trying to bring it up. I'm just trying to how do you address something like that?
Well, so there's a couple of ways to approach it, and they're kind of on sort of opposite ends of the spectrum from each other. So, like, if the person is reasonable, and that's a really big if, I want to make that very clear. Like, you know, this strategy only works if the other party is reasonable. So let's say, you know, you guys are running a Wiccan focused group, and the local Druid group is like just, you know, really, you know, they're viewing you as competition, and they're starting to talk smack about you, and you know, actively scheduling things against yours, whatever, that, you know, they're doing stuff that it's clear that they perceive you as competition instead of as allies. If they are at all reasonable, it's worth it. Either contact them directly or use an intermediary who is friends with both parties and say, you know, hey, we'd really like to talk so that we can work together to be, you know, to be allies in the community. And, you know, we want to make sure that we're not planning events on the same days that you are. And, you know, if you guys want to run a big, you know, event, maybe you guys can do, you know, that at this time of the year, and we can do our big event at this time of the year so that we're not, you know, stepping on each other, whatever. There's ways to collaborate like that. And I would say that works a limited percentage of the time. Most of the time, if you're doing stuff like this and you've got another group leader who is really perceiving you as competition to the point where you're hearing that they're kind of snarking about you, or there's some definite tension there. Most of the time they unfortunately, being able to reason with them is not likely. And, you know, that's like, it's worth giving it a shot, but don't hold your breath, if that makes sense. If you're working with one of the ones, and so this is why, you know, there's the attempts to collaborate is kind of, or at least to, you know, even things out. It's basically like if you are working to try and work with that group and you find that they're, you know, those group leaders are completely unreasonable, they're not willing to listen at all, you know, the only thing you can do is basically it's give them the cold shoulder. It's just cut them out of your life. Just don't even worry about what they're doing and what they think about you and what, you know, like just completely ignore them, shun them, just don't let them bother you for what you're doing. And people will still try and say, oh, so-and-so said this, but, and it's like, you know, we tried to reach out to them, we tried to work with them, and they, you know, they were having none of it, so we're going to continue on to do the stuff that we do and, you know, do a good job at it and do our best. And it's not to say that that isn't stressful, because, you know, knowing that there's this other group out there that actively is, you know, irked at you or worse, it can be there is a certain amount of stress for that. But, you know, that being said, you know, you're not always going to be working with group leaders who are reasonable. Just because someone is a leader of a group doesn't mean they're a good leader, and it doesn't mean that they're self-aware of their own baggage. So that's, again, why I keep stressing, you know, go and understand your own baggage and understand your own issues of ego and egotism and where that comes up, because when you're working with somebody else, you know, they've got their own baggage to deal with, and then you've got your baggage versus their baggage. And there's one conflict in particular that I'm thinking of, and this happened a few years ago in Milwaukee. So I was asked to kind of, well, they, what they asked me to do was to mediate a conflict, and it wasn't, they used the word mediate, and mediate wasn't really the right word for what I was doing. It was more that I was facilitating or kind of co-facilitating a town hall meeting that was intended to move past conflict into something constructive. But the problem is they never addressed the community conflict at all. So what we did have to do is it's hard to move forward into brainstorming for what would you like to see going forward in the community. It's hard to get into that mode without first talking about, like, what are the things that happened? So we did that, and then we were moving into brainstorming, and people were talking about, like, oh, it would be great to have, like, a witch's ball, and, oh, we'd like to see more classes. And, you know, we're brainstorming, and, you know, brainstorming is, you know, if you're doing brainstorming right, there's no wrong answers to it. You're just throwing the ideas out on the table, and not all of them are going to happen, but it's important to hear what different people want. And so we started to kind of move from brainstorming into, okay, who might be willing to try and help make some of the stuff happen? And we didn't have a huge amount of time, but we got to the end of the meeting and people seemed to be feeling pretty good. And then this one guy stands up, and he's an older guy, And I mean, I'm just a neutral party from out of town. I don't know who all the local players are, right? This guy gets up and he walks toward me. And there were another couple people co-facilitating this with me. But he's looking at me and he says, "I'm very offended that you people are here. You know, I've been running witches balls for years out of my own pocket and I'm losing money on them. And I've been running classes and nobody shows up for them." And he's going on and on and on. And, you know, and what I later find out is that he's been running a coven for like, I don't know, 20, 30 years, something like that. And, you know, and he had a stable group that was a core stable group. But, you know, he was upset hearing people talk about, you know, they wanted the stuff. And, you know, he was really pissed off. But, you know, what I could hear underneath it is that he was offended that nobody had asked him to facilitate something like this, that they asked outside people, and that made him not feel valued. But beneath all that is, you know, he'd been running stuff for a really long time, and he just didn't feel valued because people didn't necessarily show up to his stuff. But here's what folks like that, I mean, here's what I wish they understood. And this is even, you know, for those of you who are thinking, well, it is kind of competition when other people are doing stuff or other people want to do stuff. Here's kind of the thing is, just because you're running classes doesn't mean those classes are good. And I hate to put it that way, but, you know, not all people are great at teaching, not all people are great at leading rituals. And so there's that factor. There's also, it might not be in a tradition that calls to somebody. His stuff was kind of Wiccan flavored, which means I would never go to his stuff, you know, in anything other than I went to one of his rituals in a kind of a supporting local community because it was a bigger event kind of a thing. But that's, you know, I wouldn't be going to his classes. I wouldn't be regularly going to his rituals because that's not my tradition. That's not what calls to me. You know, there's any number of reasons why people might not be going to somebody's stuff. But in this case, you know, part of it was he was kind of a cranky guy. People didn't want to deal with that. So, you know, there's the competition thing, and people get really bent out of shape about that. But sometimes, you know, it could just be that it's, you know, they're offering something in a different tradition. And so it's not really competition in that respect. It's more like, oh, you know, all the, you know, if the only offerings locally have been Druid flavored and all of a sudden there's a Wiccan offering, or there's a, you know, if you have been in a Wiccan group and then suddenly you're exposed to Celtic Reconstructionism and you determine, oh, you're like, oh, that's what I am. And then you leave because you finally found another group that's doing the thing that calls to you. You know, it's not necessarily the group you were part of was bad. It's just that you found this other thing that calls to you more. But then there's the other factors of things where it's, you've got a group leader who is offering stuff and it's like they put their heart and soul into it and they try and make it happen, but they're also really difficult to deal with as a leader. And I interact with a lot of really kind of stubborn, micromanagey, perfectionist group leaders, and they don't understand why people don't stay in their group. And it's like, well, because your baggage is coming out to, you know, to play in this. And our own baggage as leaders is often where we, you know, kind of are shooting ourselves in the foot. So I don't know if that necessarily answered your question, but it, the whole competition thing, it can be really complicated. And, I mean, I would say, like, you know, you can try and work with other group leaders and negotiate with them, but if they're being really ornery about it, if they're not negotiating, you know, don't spin your wheels, don't feel like you must collaborate with them to be successful at what you're doing locally. You know, if they are actively obstructing what you're trying to do, it, you know, there's, you can only do so much. And the other thing that I would collaboration is, don't force yourself to collaborate with groups that you're not a good fit with. I've tried to do that in the past where I was like, okay, I'm trying to do these local community building initiatives and trying to work with other groups to do this. And sometimes it's a mistake, because if you try and work with people that where you're really not a good fit with each other, you're going to cause more conflict than you started out with. So that's something that can happen too. There's a lot of nuance to some of the stuff. It really depends on the situation. and the particular dynamics, but I think these are some general kind of rules that, you know, and approaches that might help you look at the situation.
Right, and that is actually a pretty good suggestion, is to don't work with a group that your group isn't really messing with.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, you know, I talked to a lot of people who are like, oh, we need to start a unity initiative. We need to get all the local groups collaborating. And that is the, if you want to start an intercommunity conflict, that's the best way to do it. And I wish it wasn't so. They pretty much always blow up. It's a matter of when, not if. And it's just the simple fact of, like, some people aren't good at collaborating with each other, and they shouldn't be forced to, because I'll use an astrophysics kind of metaphor. It's like if you've got a binary star, you need those stars to stay at, you know, a certain distance from each other. Otherwise, the orbit's not going to be stable. You know, you need that distance. And I think that a lot of group leaders are like that, where it's, you know, we can collaborate from a distance, or we can, you know, we can acknowledge that we're both trying to build community, and maybe, you know, we both take part and pay and pride, and we don't have any disagreements with each other. And we, you know, I can recommend people for your group, and you recommend people over to my group, and that's great. But, you know, we shouldn't try and plan an event together, or it's going to be like, you know, the battle in the Thunderdome, because, you know, there's some people that are just not necessarily good at collaborating, or they're not good at collaborating. Like, there's a, you know, the two people are, you know, kind of like oil and water. Maybe they're good at collaborating with people that are a certain way, or that, you know, that do things a certain way, but they're not good at collaborating with people who do things very differently from them. And that's valid. That's just, you know, that different people, we're wired different ways, and we work together different ways. And so that's why that knowing yourself and knowing the people that you're working with is really important.
Okay. Ravenfire, did you have any questions so far?
Well, one thing you said earlier, you were talking about like knowing yourself and personal work and stuff. And where would you suggest somebody start with that if, like, they're new to that concept?
Well, I would say that if you have the opportunity to engage in counseling or therapy, psychotherapy is a holy and sacred thing. I know that a lot of pagans are, you know, they're kind of
their candidates. The bad news is, it's my pet.
Oh.
walked into the other room.
No, I know that, you know, a lot of pagans are, you know, oh, therapy is, you know, it's not magical, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, therapy is what our ancient shamanic ancestors were doing for the tribe way before, you know, it was called therapy. You know, therapy is a fantastic way where you can get to know a lot more about yourself. And, you know, a lot of therapy tends to focus on, basically, it's what are the unsuccessful strategies you are engaging in your life, and how can you shift those so that you are, you know, you are able to do the stuff that you want to do. And so therapy is one way. You know, I mean, there's a ton of self-help books out there, and I can't really recommend too many of them. But the one that I would recommend is, you know, it's not specifically a pagan book, but it's by an author named Angelus Arian. And she passed recently, but she was actually an anthropologist, and she studied a number of different tribal cultures. And she kind of distilled their teachings and, you know, just a lot of their culture into distinct kind of, I guess, lessons that are repeatable. And her book is not a huge, long book either, but there's four sections of the book, and there are great questions kind of woven through it that bring up a lot of questions about shadow work, you know, looking at those places within ourselves that we don't always want to look at. If you want to read up,
you know, about that, because you mentioned it.
Oh, shadow work. Yeah, you had mentioned it earlier, and I was waiting for the opportunity to bring it back up.
Well, yep. I would say personal work and shadow work are, shadow work is a piece of personal work. Shadow work is basically looking at the places in ourselves where it's the places we don't want to look at. It's the things about ourselves that we're afraid of. And the problem is that, and this is why therapy is really a great support for this, is that sometimes we in our culture, we are so afraid of screwing up, because the consequences of screwing up or saying the wrong thing or doing the wrong thing, we're so afraid of people not liking us. There's this people pleaser kind of engine we have, a kind of a codependent engine that a lot of people end up with. And, that's where a lot of people get, a lot of anxiety centers around this idea that if I do this thing, people will be mad at me, they'll hate me, they'll reject me. That's where a lot of anxiety centers around. And so, on the one hand, it is really important to look at the mistakes that we've made in the past or the ways that we are potentially harming others or harming ourselves or harming our groups. It's important to look at those, and that's a piece of shadow work. At the same time, we also are raised in this culture of shame and negative self-talk, and so that's the real difficulty with doing shadow work, is you don't want to add more to that voice that says, "Oh, you suck. You're nobody likes you. You're never going to be able to do this. You're going to screw up everything that you do. Look at how you've already been screwing it up. Look at all these people that you've hurt. Look at all these mistakes that you've made." Like that is not something that you don't want to add fuel to that. So shadow work as part of shadow work is identifying, okay, do I have these voices? Do I have these, what we used to call, it used to be called, playing the tape, but tapes are kind of obsolete at this point, so I don't know what else to call it. It's just there's this, little track we have running in our minds of all the reasons that everybody hates us, and, not everybody has that, but I think most people have at least a little bit of it. And, you have to acknowledge that you have that to be able to face it and work with it. And that's part of shadow work. But part of shadow work is also looking at, what are the things that you do that are really, really annoying and that really are maybe even beyond annoying and harmful. Like I was talking about the whole micromanaging control freak leadership type. Well, I fall into that category. Absolutely. It's something that because I've done shadow work, because I've done personal work, I've explored a lot of that, and I have tools that I'm not that person, but it doesn't go away. It's still something where I still have that. It's still part of me. It's just that I can go, oh, okay, I'm going into micromanaging mode, or I'm being really stubborn about this, and it really would serve me to let somebody else be the person with the really good idea here, or to allow somebody else to step in and do this thing. So a lot of it is knowing what do you do that isn't really effective in a group, and just acknowledging it doesn't mean you're a bad person, but what are you doing that's maybe negatively impacting your group? Like I know that there's some folks, I don't tend to do this, but I know some folks that are really, really, they're very blunt. They're very blunt with people, and I tell it like it is, and, I don't put up with any bullshit, and I tell people what's going on and what's on my mind, and while I'm a fan of transparent communication, I'm not a fan of bluntness where it's bluntness that doesn't serve. And there is a difference between the two of those. And if you are the kind of person who is really blunt like that, to the point where when you're trying to offer feedback, you're doing it in a harmful way, that really isn't serving your purposes. All you're doing is pissing people off and driving them away. It's shadow work. A lot of shadow work is trying to understand those pieces of ourselves and how they work. One of the ways that we often discover our own shadows is and this comes out of Jungian psychology, when you observe other people around you and they're doing things that just annoy the crap out of you, one of the best questions you can ask is, do I do that? And if you do, awesome. You've discovered some shadow work for yourself. Sorry that, you know, you had to discover that you have these issues, but here's an example. When I was working as a graphic designer, my boss, he had a meeting with the vice president of our company, and he had to prepare all these physical presentations of the design concepts. And so he wanted things glued on boards in a certain way. And so we were all there, you know, trying to help all the people on the team. And he was basically shooing us away. He's like, move, I'll do it myself. And I went back to the desk, and I'm just sitting there fuming. I'm just absolutely fuming. I'm like, oh, you know, I just can't believe he did that. And when I went on and on and on, and then I finally realized, oh, my God, I do that. I am that control freak, micromanager. Like, I don't explain very well what I want, and then I get mad at people for doing it wrong. And so I learned a lot about myself as a leader just from that moment when I realized, oh, I do that. So now whenever I'm really pissed off at somebody, I'm sitting in my car ranting about them after something, and then I think, okay, do I do any of that? Is that why I'm so ticked off? Because we tend to get more ticked off about the things that other people do that are annoying, that are similar to the things that we do that are annoying. It's just a fluke of how our brains work. And if I'm like, oh, I don't really do that, then I feel more comfortable just venting. But if I do that, then I'm like, oh, okay, so now I've got to go take a look at that. One of the biggest pieces of personal work that almost anybody has is poor boundaries. It's kind of an epidemic in our culture. We have really poor boundaries. And there's a fantastic book that I recommend specifically for that, and it's called Where You End and I Begin. And it's basically about how to grow and strengthen those boundaries. But, the essence of boundaries are that we end at our skin, and that includes our bodies, our physical beings, but it also includes our thoughts and our desires. And a lot of boundary stuff can be used in consent language. So if you mm-hmm. want to go hug somebody and they do not wish to be hugged and you are touching them without their permission, you are violating their bodily sovereignty. You are violating their boundary. The same thing can be said if you are pressuring somebody to do something. And we have this happen. This happens a lot in the pagan community. It happens a lot in a lot of – everything happens everywhere. But in the pagan community, you see, like, somebody who's really, really psyched about, doing a project, running an event. They go, let's go by it. And they kind of pressure other people to help them. And then they get really, really pissed off when those people drop the ball. But the thing is they never really gave that person the opportunity to say, no, I'm sorry, I don't have time to help. And so that's another boundaries thing, is when you are pressing your desires onto someone, and it can be just a matter of, you want that person to do this thing, but they don't want to do that thing, but you're really, you're really pressuring them. Without going too far down to the boundaries rabbit hole, that's a problem that almost anybody that I encounter has some issues with boundaries. So that's, that's just a good basic one for, kind of for everybody. But, I wish I had better concrete resources for that. I am actually working on a book the kind of tentative title is Finding Your Personal Magic. But a lot of it is about, doing that deeper shadow work and it's partly about learning what you're really good at and what your dreams are and reaching for them and how to add your own magic to that. But it's also about, how do you stop leaking energy by, spinning your wheels and doing the kind of repeated bad behaviors that aren't necessarily gaining you what you want, and how to shift that in yourself so that you have more magic, more energy, more spiritual juice to go do the work that you want to do.
I need that advice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, most people do. I mean, that's when most of the rituals that I do have some component of personal work in them, because we don't learn how to examine ourselves. It's not something, you know, just like in school, we don't learn how to do our taxes. We also don't learn how to examine ourselves. We don't learn how to communicate with people very, very well. We're taught English, which is great, but that doesn't necessarily teach us how to communicate with other people. We have this theory that we're all speaking the same language, but even if we are speaking the same theoretical language, we all communicate in different ways, and we have different learning modalities and different, different styles, and it really causes a lot of conflict.
It's like the old Gallagher routine with you go to school to learn how to communicate and then tell you to sit down and shut up.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much.
So with some events that have happened recently that we've discussed on the air, I guess another – well, you know what? We probably ought to take a quick break real quick. and then when we come back, I'd kind of like to, if you don't mind, discuss some warning signs for bad leaders.
Sure, absolutely.
Let's see. What do we want to play? Because I just now decided that we should probably take a break since we're actually past due. How about, I went way too far. I went way too far. I went into the Spanish music. let's see. Here's some stuff. Let's go with, if my computer will stop scrolling, S.J. Tucker. And I'm going to play, let's play Rabbit Song. I don't know if I've ever heard that or not.
Trickster came a-calling to find a totem here, to teach the foolish heart of man without installing fear. Many came and many went, but still the trickster paused. Bear and cat and tiger tried, but had too many claws. Dog and wolf, the wise indeed, had teeth, 'twere quite a fright. And owl with his tawny eyes could only see at night. No, the trickster said at last, teachers, I see many, but my way is full of laughter, and in you I see not any. But beneath the tree where eagle sat, coyote told the tale of silly hares cavorting in the old country of Wales. Raven stared unto the sun, and crow sang awful songs, and a rabbit sat a-listening with ears so wondrous long. Aha! The trickster danced a dance of joy and victory sweet. He laughed a laugh and swooped a swoop and landed at their feet. Of all here now, the trickster said, you are the very beasts. But a rabbit said, I'm sorry, sir, but of all we are the least. The trickster smiled and raised a hand and spoke, I have a plan. The four of you shall help me to teach the heart of man. Raven, with your love of light, the sun you'll steal and soon. For the gift of warmth I give to man to be the greatest boon. And crow, you silly creature who sings without a voice, teach man of pride and helping, you really have no choice. Coyote, my friend, together we'll spin many a tale at night, and teach man by our naughtiness what really should be right. At last he turned to rabbit with a twinkle in his eye. You'll be my favorite creature, and here's the reason why. Your eyes are bright, your feet are swift, your ears hear around the bend, and your very simple humbleness will steal the heart of men. Together we shall thwart the pains the gods do throw to earth, and turn aside their fiery darts with merriment and mirth. And when time comes that men forget the lessons animals render, 'twill be the humble rabbit that mankind will remember. And round the trickster the animals throw and all the beasts, and humbly bow to the king they found, who thought himself the least.
And welcome back to the Tree of Life Hour here on the Pagans Tonight Radio Network. And that was S.J. Tucker and the Rabbit. And I hope everybody made it back. Ravenfire should be here. And Shauna Ora Knight has joined us tonight. Everyone there?
I'm still here.
Yep. I'm here.
Okay. So before we went to break, I just kind of mentioned that I really thought it would be nice to talk about some warning signs for bad leaders in our community so that we can recognize them before we get caught up in something we really don't want to be caught up in. And I thought, was wondering if you had any thoughts or suggestions on that.
Sure. Well, and again, there's a range of different types of bad leadership. There's a difference between a leader who is really kind of stubborn and kind of a know-it-all, and a leader who is, there's a range. So, I think the core. If you're looking for really the basic essence of a really big warning sign, if you are being asked to do stuff that you are really uncomfortable with, and now, given that I was just talking about shadow work, if you are in a coven or a grove or a circle and you are doing intensive shadow work. Rituals, looking into the mirror of souls, doing that kind of exploration, and that stuff is uncomfortable. That's not the kind of uncomfortable that I mean when I say this. If you suddenly discover, you join a coven and suddenly you discover that everybody is expected to, be sexually initiated by the person who runs the coven. But you notice that they have, chosen only, it's a high priest who has chosen only really attractive younger female members of the group. That's a significant warning sign. And it's not to say that there's anything, there are groups that use, there are traditions that use sexual initiation. That being said, if that is not disclosed ahead of time, if you are have been part of a train, attending classes and, done some kind of work to join the group, and then you find out, you're getting along in your training, and then you find out, to be able to do the next level of things, you have to sleep with the head of the coven. That's a pretty significant warning sign. It usually isn't that transparent, but there are groups where it is. Again, there's a difference between making it clear that that's a part of the initiatory path, where you know what you're signing up for when you join the group, and if that is just kind of revealed to you later on as this expectation and nobody told you about it, that's a pretty significant warning sign. That's that's not okay. I see a lot of emotionally abusive patterns, and if you don't know what to look for, a lot of stuff can, and this is why people get away with emotional and verbal abuse, is because it's like, that seems, reasonable, I guess, but. So one of the things is that, there are tons and tons and tons of articles out there, and I recommend reading them, but just look for some of the general red flags for emotionally abusive behavior. Again, there's a big difference between, I'm trying to think of an example. Let's say I'm running a group I'm the leader of a group, and I do a lot of rituals with personal transformation work. And, you know, it's stuff that, you know, we're doing shadow work. It's potentially stuff that might make you feel uncomfortable. You know, that stuff is fine. But let's say whenever I have a bad day, I yell at the people in my group. And everybody kind of makes excuses for it because it's like, oh, well, you know, she's doing all the stuff of leading the group. It's very stressful and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And people keep on making excuses. But it keeps getting worse. And, you know, it's just like everybody walks on eggshells around me because they don't want me to lose my temper on them. Well, that's kind of, you know, what I'm talking about with emotional abuse, where if you are worried all the time about getting somebody angry, if you do not want to disagree with them, if you don't, you know, if you are so afraid of disagreeing with them, you know, because they might snap at you, that's potentially a pretty big red flag for emotional abuse. It's not to say that we can't have a bad day. You know, I have them, and you know, when I'm having a bad day, like if I'm at home and I'm having a bad day, I talk to my partner. I say, I'm really cranky today. It's not about you. It's just, you know, I'm not in a place where I can just kind of laugh stuff off. So if I snap at you or say, you know, I'm trying to kind of just keep myself to myself and not do that. But I just want to let you know that I'm having a bad day here. One thing, and that's different than, you know, somebody who is always, always snapping at the other person to the point where they don't want to bring anything up anymore. And that, you know, then, so a lot of stuff that is potentially red flags for groups, you can actually, like if you read, you know, relationship articles about emotional abuse, it's the same pattern. It's just on a group scale. I would say the emotional / verbal abuse pattern is probably the abuse pattern that flies under the radar the most easily, but there's the most material out there. And sometimes you really have to see it and experience it before you can kind of wrap your brain around it. You know, I, having been in a couple of relationships that did end up becoming emotionally abusive, like, it, you know, your tendency is often going to be to keep making excuses for the person. And again, this is where the knowing yourself part is really important, and knowing other people part is, you know, becomes a factor in that. Is you want to be able to discern the difference between this person is having a bad day and I can forgive them for, you know, for snapping at me because they're having a bad day, and like they're always having a bad day, and they always are taking things out on a specific person, or, you know, so those are kind of some basic red flags. You know, other red flags are people who do not respect your boundaries, and that's where I go back to the book Where You End and I Begin, and why that's a great place to start is, you know, if someone is consistently hugging me or, you know, putting an arm around me or touching me, and I have a conversation with them and say, you know, I'm really not okay with you touching me. I really would prefer that you not engage in physical touch with me. And they continue to not respect that. That's a pretty significant red flag there. It's one thing if the person's like, I forgot. I'm sorry. I'm really touchy feely. I'm really sorry. That's one conversation. And if they just are like, well, you should be able to be okay with hugs, that's really, then they're trying to kind of pressure you into doing things. Even if it's not necessarily a sexual thing, it's just they're not respecting your body.
And you know what? I've seen that all over Facebook here lately too, because somebody posted a meme about one of the little princes didn't give the prime minister of, I think, Canada or someplace, a high five. And they called him a spoiled brat and, you know, pompous little snot and all this other stuff. And we're just talking how and then, of course, you got the other people that are saying that's his right, you know.
That's his right. That's his
prime minister. the prime minister didn't make a big deal out of it, but I just saw so many people. I mean, this is a little boy. He's like 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's
right
I
personal space.
Yeah, I posted a meme about it, which and it's basically one of the reasons that we have such poor boundaries. You know, I was saying that that's probably an issue that almost anybody listening to this has because it's just it's so prevalent. One of the reasons we have poor boundaries is because as kids, we are told by our parents, go hug so-and-so, or someone tries to hug us and we don't want it, and they say, no, you know, let grandma hug you. So we are told that our bodily sovereignty is not worth anything, and we are told that it's okay to force ourselves and other people in that way. And then, you know, we're taught those examples emotionally as well. We're told you should want this and you should want that. And, you know, this is what I want for you. So this is what you're going to do. You know, other examples of poor boundaries are, you know, people who say, oh, you know, that guy is perfect for you. You should totally stay with him. And, you know, don't lose that one. He's a great catch. When they, you know, they're not part of your relationship. They don't know what's going on. But it's they're pushing their desires for you, their wants for you. You know, even if they mean well by it, it's still they're pushing their agenda onto you. So yeah.
Okay. And it is actually getting time for us to start wrapping up. Advice you want to give to? Is there any advice that? Luckily, we don't show after us, so we can go over. It's okay. Is there any advice, though, that you would give to people that maybe we haven't touched on yet?
You know, I mean, I could talk leadership for hours, and in fact, I do, because I do, you know, weekend intensives on the topic. You know, there are finally books out there on leadership for pagans. You know, I've written or edited, a couple of them myself. There's other stuff out there. But its thing is that there are actual resources out there, and some of it is, you know, you can learn communication techniques, you can, you know, learn nonviolent communication, you can learn about learning modalities, you can learn all sorts of stuff like that. There are more and more groups out there where you can potentially, you know, volunteer with another group, or, you know, if you're looking at, you know, if you want to learn how to run pagan events, you could mentor, you know, get a local, you know, volunteer for the local events that you can get mentored. There are lots more opportunities out there than there were even say a decade ago. But that being said, the one thing that's really important is that self-knowledge underneath it, and knowing that you don't know everything and that that's okay, and being willing to learn and seeking that stuff out. One of the biggest things I see is what it's kind of the sad axiom of leadership is the people that most need a class on leadership are the ones who are least likely to feel that they need it. They're, you know, I've been a leader for 10 years. I know exactly what I'm doing. It's like, I teach leadership and I still am always learning about things and exploring myself and trying to, you know, figure out how to be better at this stuff, because, there's a lot out there. But, you know, if folks are interested in resources on specific topics within leadership, you know, I may have written some articles on things, or I may know of other folks who are. There's lots and lots and lots of great blogs out there that touch on many of these topics. And, you know, people can certainly message me. You can find me on Facebook. I may not be able to accept your friend request, but because I'm kind of full on friends, but you can message me on Facebook. You can find me via my website. My website is shaunaoranight.com, but my email address is on there, but you can just email me at shaunaora@gmail.com. And I run a couple of groups on Facebook. I run a group called Pagan Leadership Skills, and you can post questions there, and, you know, and we'll talk about them. I do webinars sometimes. I'm actually about to launch a Patreon campaign to kind of fund giving myself more time to write, to get more books out, but on the topic of pagan leadership. But I'm going to be doing some videos for the folks who subscribe to my Patreon And so, yeah, there's, I mean, there are resources out there. And if you're looking for something specific, you know, you can message me, or if you're on Facebook, you can, you know, join the Pagan Leadership Skills Group, and we talk about stuff there. And, I'd love to get more conversations happening in the group.
I didn't even know that group was out there. I'm going to have to join it. And we've been friends for a long time on Facebook.
Yeah, it's, yeah, just, you know, you just search on Pagan Leadership Skills, it'll come up, and then you ask to join it, and then I approve you, and you're in the group, so.
And for those that don't know, she's also a fabulous artist. She does some really pretty work.
I'll tell you a funny thing. I'm actually doing this podcast from the parking lot of a Michael's craft store because I was out running errands to get art supplies and ran out of time. So I decided I'm in the parking lot of a Michael's so that I can work on more art projects tonight.
But what would you consider yourself? It's almost tribal in a way. Glittery tribal.
Yeah, because it's kind of medieval, illuminated manuscript, pagan temple art, textury, collage with jewels thing. Yeah, I don't know how to. And I'm working on a fairy tale series, so that's even more sparkly than usual. So.
But for those of you, if you get a chance, check her art out. It's wonderful. One day I'm going to have one of her pieces. I just got to save up money. And she does awesome.
Well, you know what? I do payment plans too. So that's something that I'm doing more of is people see stuff and they're like, okay, I want one of those. And so I'm like, I'll just go ahead and start paying into it. And when you get to a certain point, well, I'll start work on the project. And I worked on that Morrigan shrine that I did on three wooden panels, and it had the Morrigan
that
and it had two ravens.
That was so awesome.
And I sold it right there off. It wasn't even finished, and I sold it right there off my Facebook. And then somebody else wanted a shrine like that, but for Hecate. And the woman who bought the Morrigan shrine is paying me $50 a month for it. And or something like that. I forget exactly the, but you know. So yeah, I do stuff like that where I just work out payment plans with somebody, and I can do custom stuff, and I really like doing the shrine pieces because groups will commission me to do a shrine, and it's a shrine that they use for their coven work. To one of their patron deities, which is really kind of spiffy.
Yeah, I love your work. So I just want to throw that out there because I didn't sound like you were heading that direction. And I want to make sure everybody knew.
Yeah, I actually one of my, now that I'm not touring, because I've been on the road for most of the summer, I'm going to work to get my artwork loaded up onto a store indie site. I used to be on Etsy, and I wasn't liking how Etsy worked for a couple of reasons. So I'm going to try out store indie and see how that goes. But right at the moment, I pretty much just sell the artwork right off my Facebook. I post images on Facebook and people buy the pieces, but there isn't really a single place where all the pieces that I have available are listed with the prices. So that's something I'm going to be working on over the next month or so.
So you have to let me know how that goes because, yeah, I haven't been too impressed with Etsy either. I do all my sales in person. I haven't done a single sale on Etsy.
The only sales I've really had on Etsy, most of the sales are if I put the piece on Etsy and then I posted the Etsy link to my Facebook.
Yeah,
which is ridiculous because I could have just sold it off my Facebook. I'm not actually making any sales off of Etsy itself, and then Etsy has additional fees, whereas you have to pay upfront with Etsy. Whereas with Store Indie, you don't have to pay their fee until you sell the piece. So for me that's pretty important because it's like I'm not making any money off of the actual site. Why, you know? Anyways, The one advantage to any of those sites is that I do need a place where you can see all my artwork and how much it costs and have an easy way to buy it. So that's That's what I'm going to be working on, and you know, it's a pain uploading all that stuff, and you know, it's very time consuming. But you know, there's no way I could have maintained my inventory online while I was traveling and selling stuff. I'm like, I don't even know what I have left at this point. I mean, like, I don't know what's in there, what's in the van. So but yeah, I do all sorts of stuff. I do journals and paintings, and I paint jeweled pumpkins and you know, little trinket boxes. I do just all sorts of stuff. And you know, I do some fantasy themed stuff, you know, swords and dragons and glass slippers, and I also do, you know, ravens and wolves and you know, the Morrigan or Hecate or Freya or, you know, whatever. I have a giant Inanna piece that I'm going to be shipping to the United Kingdom, which is that's an expensive shipping proposition, let me tell you. But it's a really cool piece. So I'm, you know, but yeah, I like doing cool stuff, and particularly, like I said, I like the shrine. Well, the shrine boxes are probably my favorite. What I do is I take like big wooden boxes, and I put broken mirror glass into them as a mosaic, and then I paint the outside of the doors. And then you open them up, and you have this mirror mosaic, and you can put a candle in front of them, in front of the mirror, and you turn the lights out, and you have the candle going, and then you kind of see the candle reflecting in the mirror, and you can use it to trance yourself out and do scrying work.
Neat.
Yeah. So yeah, let me know when you want something. We'll work it out. Because you should have more shiny things.
Yes. Raven Powers,
the world does need more shiny.
To ask per se before we let Shauna go?
Not that I can really think of. I'll probably think of stuff probably 2 or 3 days from now. It's always like, anytime I listen to Shauna talk, it's like always, I'm just like, my brain goes like in 5 million directions, because it's like, wow, it's so much to digest.
Well, like I said, join the Pagan Leadership Skills group, and then you know, you can post questions there, and you know, and we'll get discussion going.
All right. So I'm going to do a quick rundown of events that are going on over the next couple weeks, real quick. But I just want to say, Shauna, thanks for joining us tonight, and we will hopefully
talk to you.
Thanks
very much for having me. Yeah, you guys have a good night.
Thank you. You too.
You too.
All right, so we have the Samhain Roots Festival presented by Coven of the Blessing Moon this weekend. It actually started today at the Cattle Ranch in Providence, Kentucky. Akasha's Way is also sponsoring that, I believe, out of Fort Knox, Kentucky. So go to the Akasha's Way Facebook page, and you should be able to find out more details about it. Let's see. Tomorrow is Mother Grove Temple's annual ancestor vigil, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Cathedral of All Souls in Asheville, North Carolina. Let's see. We also have Saturday, there's a witch's ball at Lothlorien Nature Sanctuary. I believe they are doing it as part of their Samhain Festival they have going on there. Tickets are available at elvenhome.org. Let's see, we also have Willful Bane, The Joy of Hex, Sunday, October 23rd, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. This is at, I don't know where it's at, but it's $20, and you get cornbread. There was, I thought there was an event, a site posted, but there's not now. So just look up Willful Bane, The Joy of Hex. It is a public event, so you just have to search it to find out where it is. Celebrating Samhain, Halloween Traditions and Magic, Sunday, October 23rd, 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Aroma Gregory Soap and Tea Company in Nashville, Tennessee. It looks like Kiki Dombrowski is involved in that. Samhain Open Circle, Wednesday, October 26th at 7 p.m. at Akasha's Way in Fort Knox, Kentucky. Death Traveling the Dark Cloak of Night by Byron Ballard. This will be at Asheville, Raven and Crone in Asheville, North Carolina, Thursday, October 27th, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Also, October 27th, something that we all want to go to, Bahalloween, the Viking Samhain. October 27th through the 30th at Bar Marley. Tickets available at holdmyticket.com. I'm sure there's more to it, so you might want to find the Facebook event page to actually use their link. Also, Tuatha Dea will be playing at that.
Nice.
If they do that
nice,
again,
nice.
We have to go.
Okay.
October 28th, Samhain Festival at Circle Sanctuary, 28th through the 30th. It's at Circle Sanctuary in Barneveld, Wisconsin. Tickets available at circlesanctuary.org. Samhain Get Together in Shelbyville, Kentucky, October 20th through the 13th. It looks like it's a public event. I'm just not sure because just because someone makes it public does not mean to. I don't know. I'm not sure. Just because someone makes it a public event doesn't always mean it is a public event. Sanctuary is also having Witch's Ball at their Samhain Festival, which will be October 28th. Let's see, Spirit Fest, October 29th at Shelby Park and Riverside Pavilion. I believe that is in Nashville, correct? Saturday, October 29th, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Tickets are available at spiritfesttn.com. Nashville, just to let you know. Let's see. We also have, I'm trying to at least go through the end of October real quick. So we have Community Drum Circle Giant Jam in Louisville, Kentucky at Resurfaced. Saturday, October 29th, 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Witch Festival 2016 at Monongahela Aquatorium in Monongahela, Pennsylvania. I hope I'm saying this right, because I know the person that that gave us the event is in chat, so I'm sorry if I'm butchering it. tickets available at monaquatorium.org, which is monaquatorium.org. That is Saturday, October 29th, 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Let's see, there is a, let's see, Twice Day at the Halloween. And then there's the Halloween celebration Halloween celebration at Moonstruck in Jeffersontown, Kentucky. It's 3207 College Drive, October 30th, 1 p.m. to 8 p.m. I think I might try to make it out to that. Blessings with the Dark Goddess of Samhain Rite, the Mother Grove Goddess Temple will be doing this at Aston Park, October 30th, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Nashville Burlesque Witches Ball, October 30th. At 8 p.m. to 11 p.m., which is a Sunday. It's at the Basement East in Nashville, Tennessee. And I hope, I don't know if that was a pagan thing or not, but that's what it said, which is also, I'm assuming it is. So, do we already have Viking meetup?
Yeah, actually, I can tell you when that is. That is going to be November 4th, Friday night, November 4th at Wix Pizza on Baxter Avenue.
There is so much going on that weekend.
I know, right?
Because I probably will not be able to make it. I've got a wedding to perform that Saturday morning. I've got a wedding to attend that Saturday evening. And then I have the Halloween isn't over till you say it's over party.
Well,
I don't know if I'm going to be able to. I'm probably going to be too exhausted to go to, though, by the end of the day. So, But let's see, next week is next week our Heathen Perspective?
It is. Ulf and I are working on something coming up. I think we're going to be pre-taping an episode for you all next week, because I think Ulf has a commitment next Thursday, and so do I. So I think we are going to be pre-taping it.
Okay.
But we are kind of working together.
All right. Okay. So, everyone, you will be hearing us next week. We may not be talking to you live, but you will at least be hearing us. So, everyone, have a blessed evening.
And y'all be safe out there.
And here, this sounds like an interesting song. Ginger Doss, and it's called Hippie Pocket. So let's see how this sounds. And again, we will see you all next week.
In a new town, and I'm sitting in traffic. Gonna go around, gotta get past it. Find myself on a colorful back street, where the people rock to the sound of the backbeat. Suddenly sun is shining, tires dying, day is crying, colors are bright with the rainbow light, and my new blue jeans are fading. Everybody, everybody, everybody. Broke down far from the city. Tow truck guy didn't like the looks of me. Had to walk away from the process mechanical. I got a warm welcome from the shop with the pinnacle. Lured by the mist with the herbal twist, I got my backroom bearings. Did a magic quest to the pagan. Get to the tea party rally. Weird. Must have been a powerful brownie. Still veggie juice on Michael Lane. Slipped out through the darkest alley. Went back around to the part of town my people like to hang out. Hookah bars, guitars, art cars, guitars, and Occupy is camped out. Something sweet.
Give me what you got and you have it by. Pocket. If you think you've lost it, find a hairbear pocket. If you think you've lost it, find a hairbear pocket. If you think you've lost it, find a hairbear pocket. A hairbear pocket.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans Unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.